This is the second day of this July-August 2018 seven-day sesshin. I'm just going to say August. You know. We'll resume reading from the text from yesterday, a book called Zen Letters, which are the teachings of the 11th and 12th century Chinese Zen master Yuan Wu, the author of the Blue Cliff Record. Here's the next letter. If you want to attain intimacy, the first thing is don't seek it. If you attain through seeking, you have already fallen into interpretive understanding. It's interesting, the translator capitalizes the word intimacy. If you want to attain intimacy, you could say oneness, merging. Don't seek it. It is, don't, with the thought in your mind of intimacy or oneness, don't try to reach for that as an idea. It will come on its own, for sure. Zen practice always reveals this oneness that is the way things are, the way the universe is. We are not separate, fragmented, disconnected. There is nothing apart. And that happens, that insight grows just through the work on the practice that we're, the particular practice we have. He continues, this is especially true because this great treasury extends through all times, clearly evident, empty and bright. Since time without beginning, it has been your own basic root. You depend on its power entirely in all your actions. He's talking, of course, about this essential nature of ours, the ultimate principle, the way, this great treasury, this mind with a capital M, our true mind. You depend on its power entirely in all your actions. Nothing we do can possibly be apart from this. Everything we do is the functioning of this self nature. You will only pass through to freedom when you cease and desist to the point that not even a single thought is born. Then you penetrate through without falling into sense and matter, and without dwelling in conceptualizations and mental images. This phrase, cease and desist from dwelling in thoughts, from pursuing our thoughts, chewing on our thoughts, sifting through our thoughts, that we have to cease and desist doing. In the next letter, he says, what is important is to respect the root and extend it to the branches. Now, the root is this realm of no mind, no thought, no words. The branches are everything else. this mind of ours and its many uses. The branches are words. Branches are practices that are secondary to just pure zazen. Devotions, rituals, ceremonies, chanting, prostrations, bowing, these are all the branches. So when he says, respect the root and extend it to the branches, this means whatever we're doing, to do it no-mindedly, which means purely, single-mindedly, without the mind somewhere else, without the split that most people have in everything they do and everything they say, doing one thing, actually the action, there's the action, and then the mind is somewhere else. But the mind is somewhere else. In Zen, we place such great emphasis on the root. Other schools of Buddhism put more emphasis on the branches, on the on chanting, for example, on devotions, on prayer, maybe on sutra study, reading, study. From a Zen perspective, these are all the branches. It's not that they're to be ignored, but that we are developing the strong root that will enable us to do all those things, all those secondary practices, to do them single-mindedly. Because if we're not doing them single-mindedly, then they have little value. The prostrations are just kind of a calisthenic, and if our mind is somewhere else as we're doing it, if we're doing it self-consciously, if we're doing it with thoughts in the mind about thoughts of the past, thoughts of the future, thoughts of self, if we're doing a prostration thinking about ourself, then it doesn't have much value. Same with bowing, standing bows, chanting. Everything depends. Every action, every form of functioning depends on state of the mind, the quality of the mind, whether or not we're free of thoughts. Now, just to repeat this first sentence, what is important is to respect the root and extend it to the branches. This will benefit both root and branches and also illuminate the legitimate and fundamental task of people of complete enlightenment and comprehensive mystery. If you work hard to carry this out, you will surely improve. In general, to practice the way and seek out the mystery, you must have a great basis in faith. You use this faith to believe in a deep sense that this matter does not lie in words or in any of the myriad states of mind. In fact, in truth, the path is right where you stand. This is what I talked briefly about in the Zendo this morning, the importance of faith. In a practical, working sense, this means faith, above all, in the practice, the particular practice you're working on. This will do everything for you if you can just bring enough faith to it, which means concentration on it. This matter, this work, this way does not lie in words or in any of the myriad states of mind. Sashin, The Sesshin experience is an experience of encountering one state of mind after another. Difficult states of mind, discouragement, fear, anxiety, and positive states of mind sometimes. States of elation, rapture, great sublime peace. The trick to Sesshin is just not to get attached to any of these states, but stay with the practice. He continues, put aside the crazy and false mind that has been concocting your knowledge and understanding, and make it so that nothing whatsoever is weighing on your mind. Fully take up this matter in your perfect, wondrous, inherent nature, which is fundamentally pure and quiescent. Subject and object are both forgotten, and the road of words and thoughts is cut off. You open through and clearly see your original face. Make it so that once found, it is found forever and remains solid and unmoving. He's talking about awakening. See your original face. Original face is the translation of a Chinese rendering of true nature. Our essential mind. Well, he really is speaking from experience, no question about it. He knows this. He's been on the other side when he says, put aside the crazy and false mind that has been concocting your knowledge and understanding. The road of words and thoughts is cut off. Another version of that we've read from other texts is past and future is cut off. A lot of our mental trafficking involves either the future or the past. Next letter. The present perception is the truth, but the truth is beyond this perception. Let's just look at that. The present perception is the truth. So hearing the cicadas, hearing the train, the birds, seeing. And during Sesshin, there's not a lot that we see, especially in the Zendo. Feeling. This is it. This hearing, seeing, feeling, smelling, and so forth. This is it. But it is even beyond this. You could say that our true nature is beyond the senses and the sense perceptions, but it is not apart from them. He says, if you are attached to perception, then this is a perception. It is not the arriving at the truth. Those who arrive at truth transcend perception, but they manage to use perception without dwelling in perception. When you pass directly through perception and get free of it, It is all the fundamental truth. He's talking about, yes, being awake, being hearing and seeing and feeling and so forth, but not clinging to those things, not getting caught by the particular sound and then thinking about it, not getting caught by a sight. This is the danger in during sesshin of going out for a walk. It's nothing wrong with looking around if you can do so without getting caught in the perception. It's hard. It's hard to be looking out in this gorgeous natural environment, the trees, the sky, the pond, the wildlife, and not fall into thoughts about those things. The safest thing, if you don't want to backslide, if you're out, is to keep your eyes down. Well, then you've got the sounds, of course, but that can't be avoided. I fished out a koan in the Mumonkan, the commentary to number 16, the sound of the bell. And in the commentary, Mumon says, in practicing Zen, you should avoid being swayed by sounds and forms. Even though you may attain insight by hearing a sound or seeing a form, this is simply the ordinary way of things. Nor is it anything to talk about when a Zen person is able to master sounds and control forms and thus clearly see the reality of everything and be wonderfully free in everything she does. What does that mean, to master sounds and control forms? It really means to see the emptiness of sound and form. Sound is easier. It's easier to see the emptiness of sound because it doesn't last. We hear a sound, and then it's gone. There's no substance to it. It's a sound. Or a bell is struck. Boom. Here and then gone. No root. No permanence. But though this is so, Mumon continues, just tell me, does the sound come to the ear, or does the ear go to the sound? Does the sound come to the ear, or does the ear go to the sound? Back to Yuan Wu's letter, the truth, it's so difficult to find a word that isn't conceptual in referring to this reality. There it is again, this truth, this essential nature. This truth is not being or non-being. It is not speech or silence. Yet it can manifest both being and non-being, both speech and silence. It is forever constant and unchanging. wait a minute, how does that square with the fact, with the statement that everything is in flux, everything is changing? As we sit here, our own bodies are changing. Our minds are in flux. The cushions themselves, though we can't perceive it, are in change, are in flux. The walls even. So what does he mean? It is forever constant and unchanging. Then he quotes Yunmen, or Umon. It cannot be existent when you speak of it, and non-existent when you don't. Or existent when you think of it, and non-existent when you don't. So it's independent of our speaking of it or thinking of it. It. This it. You must subtly arrive at this truth and get its great function. In other words, not just see, have an insight into the nature of things, but then be able to act, to function out of that insight. Always let transcendent wisdom appear whether you are speaking or silent, whatever you are doing. Why would you say that it is close at hand when you are in your teacher's presence, but far away when you are in the countryside? As you go directly forward, naturally you will encounter it wherever you are. He's reminding us that there's no holy place or holy presence. It's not everywhere. We can't get away from it, this essential nature. It's no more in a zendo than outside a zendo. It's no more in the zendo than in a club with blaring music. We're more likely to access it in the zendo than in a club with blaring music and alcohol and drugs. But it's no more here than there. When he says, always let transcendent wisdom appear, whether you are speaking or silent, for someone who's working on mu, this means always bring your mind to mu. Whether you're speaking or silent, whatever you're doing. It's no more present in sesshin than outside sesshin. It is you yourself. All the enlightened ones and ancestral teachers take this one true thing, the translator italicizes it, take this one true thing very seriously. It is spread among beings of all potentials, high and low, noble and lowly, without any preferences or aversions. It is in all the myriad kinds of action, naturally real, clear, and complete. if this matter were in words, then it should be definable in a single statement with no further change. Why would there be thousands and thousands of sayings imparted by enlightened teachers with no end to them? From this we know that it is not within words, but we need to use words to illustrate this matter. Sharp-spirited people should directly comprehend this idea. So if there were one statement that captured this essential nature, then that would be it. We wouldn't need anything else. So there's not an answer exactly to a koan. There's not an answer, but there is a way to come to understand it beyond words, which is the only real understanding. That is a way of embodying Mu, let's say. Pablo Picasso once said, computers are useless, they only give you answers. And working on a koan, it's the questioning that is the real work. Working on a koan, we're not really trying to come up with an answer. I mean, it's better not to try to come up with an answer, but just question for its own sake. That's pure questioning. Forget about answers. Just questioning. It's a big difference. He continues, those who realize transcendence pass through words and phrases and can make them come to life. They can use one saying as 100,000 sayings, or use 100,000 sayings as one saying. Yeah, so if there's understanding behind words, then yes, they are pointing to this truth. And then he recounts an exchange between Zen Master Yang Yang and Zhao Zhou, or Joshu. Yang Yang asks, when one doesn't bring a single thing, then what? Zhao Zhou said, put it down. Yang Yang asked, if I don't bring a single thing, what should I put down? Zhao Zhou said, I see you cannot put it down. Or, all right then, carry it away. And at these words, Yang Yang was greatly enlightened. This is a koan in the Shoyu Roku collection. And then later, another Zen master wrote a verse to go with this dialogue. Here's the verse. Not bringing a single thing, he can't lift it even using both arms. A clear-eyed man like Zhao Zhou is hard to find. At a word, Yang Yang realized his error. If he stepped back, he'd fall into a deep pit. In his heart was boundless joy, like that of a pauper finding a jewel. Once the poison is forgotten, there's no connection. Snakes and tigers become his intimate friends. Different species, equally understood over the lonely centuries, the pure wind has never stopped. The pure wind has never stopped. It's blowing right now through the zendo. And he relates another story, Layman Pong. Layman Pong is one of the most famous enlightened lay people in Zen history. Layman Pong was with his whole family sitting around the fire. And by the way, Layman Pong and his wife and his daughter were all supposedly deeply enlightened. So they're sitting around the fire. Layman Pong suddenly said, "Difficult. Difficult. 10 bushels of oil hemp spread out on a tree." And then his wife said, "Easy, easy. On the tips of 100 grasses, the meaning of Zen." And then their daughter, Ling Zhao, gets the last word. She says, "Not difficult, not easy. Eating when hungry, sleeping when tired." It shows a different two points of view, or three, but with the daughter's statement, it's just two ways of looking at this practice. We can't say it's easy and just leave it at that, because look at how much work it takes to do this. But we can't just say it's difficult and leave it at that, because we can find that it really becomes a lot simpler when we learn how to do this work, when we learn how to leave our thoughts alone. To eat, just simply eat when hungry and sleep when tired, it's probably rare. How many people can do that? And yet, how difficult could it really be? Just eating when hungry, sleeping when tired. He says, usually when I relate this story to people, most of them prefer the daughter's remark and dislike what old man Pong and old lady Pong said about difficult and easy. But this is nothing but making interpretations by following the words. People who think like this are far from getting to the root of the fundamental design. That is why the arising of the tracks of words is the origin of paths that deviate from truth. Only if you can forget the words and embody the meaning will you see how these three Zen teachers each put forth a hand and together held up the bottomless basket, how they strained out mussels and clams. You will see how in every move they had the ability to kill people's false selves and conditioned perceptions, and how in every place they had a road to get out on. Talk about the freedom of not being attached to words and thoughts. when Bodhidharma came from the West, bringing the Zen transmission to China, he didn't set up written or spoken formulations. He only pointed directly to the human mind. That is, through sitting. Just sitting. Pointing directly to the human mind. He didn't set up written or spoken formulations. He didn't try to explain mind. He embodied mind. If we speak of direct pointing, this just refers to what is inherent in everyone. The whole essence appears responsively from within the shell of ignorance. This is no different in ordinary people than in all the sages since time immemorial. It is what we call the natural, real, inherent nature, fundamentally pure, luminous, and sublime. It swallows up and spits out all of space. It is a single, solid realm that stands out alone, free of the senses and their objects. Again, he's making a pretty good stab here in describing this essential nature in words. Even knowing, for sure he knew that words can't encompass it. No words can really capture this nature of ours. Fundamentally pure, luminous, and sublime. This is what we all have in common. This is our nature. It's not what George Bernard Shaw called just a feverish clod of ailments and grievances, though that's how we can feel at times in Sesshin. Even in our grievances, even in our pain and our frustration and our discouragement, still, there's just this pure, luminous, and sublime nature. Just detach from thoughts and cut off sentiments and transcend the ordinary conventions. Use your own inherent power and take up its great capacity and great wisdom right where you are. It is like letting go when you are hanging from a mile-high cliff, releasing your body and not relying on anything anymore. He says, detach from thoughts, okay, we know that, and cut off sentiments, feelings. This doesn't mean to reject feelings or suppress feelings. That's the last thing we want to do. But it means not getting bound in feelings. Feelings are not the base of the mind. They're not the floor of the mind. We can go beyond feelings and emotions. Feelings and emotions are part of what make us human. We have no quarrel with feelings and emotions in Zen. It's only when we cling to feelings and emotions that we become obstructed, impeded in our practice. So how do you neither suppress feelings and emotions or cling to them? How do you neither reject feelings and emotions nor attach to them? Through absorption in the practice. We don't have to think about rejecting or not rejecting, clinging or not clinging, when we're one with the practice we're working on. That's when we're free. The feelings and emotions will just move through, following their natural course, like everything else arising in the mind, lasting a shorter or longer period of time, and then passing on. Time is up now. We'll stop and recite the four vows. All beings without number, endless blind passions, I vow to uproot. Dharma gates beyond measure, I vow to penetrate. The great way of Buddha, I vow to attain. All beings without number, I vow to liberate. Endless blind passions, I vow to uproot. Dharma gates beyond measure, I vow to penetrate. The great way of Buddha, I vow to attain. All beings without number, I vow to liberate. Endless blind passions, I vow to uproot. Dharma gates beyond measure, I vow to penetrate. The great way of Buddha, I vow to attain.